Hello and good evening, everybody. Thank you all for joining us tonight for the 27th episode of Podcast D Culture. Joining me tonight is the one and only
Mihir Jam.
And that's it. Harvey is strolling in the Mall of Emirates with his wife, doing what? I don't know. He just said that he came from watching Pirates of the Caribbean. No.
The 18th. Prince of Persia.
So, I don't know. Maybe you'll have something interesting from him next week. So, that means he's not here this week. So, it's just me and Mihir. But I actually wanted to do it next week, but you know, Mihir's publicized it so much that you forced, my hand is forced. I have to speak now. I have to make this public appearance. We cannot deny our listeners the pleasure of my voice.
And I mean, it's, I feel kind of wrong not doing it today, so I said, let's just do it.
For you listeners, for you. We're doing this for you.
This is commitment. And not on the part of Arfi.
Yes, so you can blame him next week. Anywho, let's just quickly give a rundown of the new. Well, it's not exactly that much of a change, but you know, whatever. The new structure of the show. We're gonna keep the original standings, what we've been playing, what we've been watching, but we're gonna keep it short. We're not gonna discuss in detail or much about what we've been playing or watching. The weekly topic is gonna be anything that. It could be, I mean, you know, something that we've all played, all three of us have played, or, you know, all three of us have watched, games, movies, anime, TV series, current and old. So, you know, we will try and keep it so that, you know, by this week, we'll notify you guys, you know, what we're gonna watch or play next week, what's gonna be the topic next week. So, if any of you listeners, would like to watch it as well, and then, you know, think of, or, you know, want to take part in the discussion, then feel free to do so. So let's start with the yum yum, what we've been eating. Oh man, the chocolate cake was nice. But apart from that, what we've been playing. Mihir, why don't you start?
So this week I played Red Dead Redemption, and that's about it. So I played about four or five hours into it, and yeah, this
game.
When
did your exams finish again?
My exams finished on Monday. Monday.
Okay, so you've had a decent amount of time since, pretty much a week.
Yeah, you can say that almost a week. And so I've been only playing Red Dead Redemption. And I got to say, this game is it's truly amazing. I mean,
how many hours in?
I've put into about 6 to 7 hours.
The fuck? You played the whole week and that's all?
Yeah, I haven't actually been playing much. I don't know, I've been getting bored on the Xbox. So I just, like,
know what you feel, but then my boredom is I you know, sort of take it over in on the PC side of things.
Yeah, I don't know. Gaming just, at this point is very, very
it
stale.
It is a summer season. We don't have anything.
It's very stale. So I don't know. I honestly don't know if I'll be playing much this summer. Anyway, I played Red Dead Redemption, and that game is it's an amazing game. I mean, it's like. I've noticed this, that every Rockstar game has this kind of like this similar story where it's basically one guy who's new into this town, and for whatever reason he's ended up in this new town. In GTA 4 he ended up in Liberty City because
they
he wanted
the same
to live
story in table tennis.
Rockstar, I guess, sandbox games, not sports games.
Okay. I'll stop the trolling.
Yeah.
Continue.
And. And basically, this guy he's trying to either make his name in that town or like in Red Dead Redemption, he's trying to basically take this old partner down who was in his gang, and basically the characters are very similar, like Nico Bellic and John Marston, in the sense that they are both like trying to forget their past, and they're trying to create something new with their life now. So I guess that's like a similar theme. Even in, I think, GTA San Andreas, that was the theme, or like that was the character's backstory, as well as in GTA 3 and GTA Vice City. So, I mean, it's not bad.
All of those games?
Yeah, I've played all of those games. Yeah, I've played every. Yeah, I really enjoyed the GTA series. So. I'm not just like randomly blowing people up. I like to play the story because the story is actually really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the game is it's got a 95 on Metacritic, as we've like said before, and I believe it deserves it. The online I haven't touched at all actually, but the single player is like it's such a vast experience, in the sense like there are so many mini games, the story is interesting, there's so many like this world they've created is so like freaking huge, it's amazing, and like the graphics are amazing in the game. It is truly a wonderful game, and like Rockstar have basically, I guess, opened a new franchise for themselves, where they can explore like how they've basically delved deep into the GTA franchise. I guess this is also another franchise which can basically.
It is a sequel to Red Dead Revolver.
Well, that's what they say. They say it's a sequel, like in like quote unquote spirit, but not exactly, because Red Dead Revolver was more or less like a third person shooter. And that was a very
so no open world or
no the Red Dead Revolver was not open world. This is a open world, and this is basically a new character basically it's like I would say it's more or less a new world which they've created in this compared to Red Dead Revolver.
Okay.
And highly recommend it. Definitely pick it up. I'm still playing through it, and. It's a fun game. I mean, it's a great game if you have, especially now in the stale season we have. And I just got to give I just have to recommend the soundtrack of this game. The soundtrack of this game is just absolutely brilliant. It's all Western, yeah. But it's such a great
actual license, or they made it for this?
No, they made it. It's newly composed.
Okay.
And these guys, I'm not sure what their names are, but these guys basically have done like such an amazing homage to Ennio Morricone. It's quite brilliant. The soundtrack itself, Ennio Morricone is basically the guy who's basically composed about 75% of every Western movie ever created. He did all of the Sergio Leone movies. He's done numerous
dude
other movies.
Must be old then.
He is. He's like I think in his 80s right now, or late 70s. And he's still composing. I'm not sure though. But that guy is basically known as the god of Western film music. And this is like a great homage to him. And on itself, it stands on its own. So it's a great soundtrack. So if you have a chance to check that out, please do, because it's quite an amazing soundtrack. Anyway, that's all I've been playing this week.
That's it.
Yeah, this Red Dead Redemption.
You were free since Monday, and you've played 6 to 7.
Well, not free. I still have some school. School keeps giving work, so I'm still like busy with that.
What work? You just finished exams, didn't you?
Yeah, but our school is like retarded in that sense. They keep giving us work.
What curriculum are you guys following?
The International Baccalaureate, IB.
Fuck. God, English, whatever, man.
It's quite retarded.
Back in my days, when you gave exams, you were free for the summer. Anywho, since that's all you've been playing, I've been playing nothing except what I've already been playing, which was Blur. Man, that game, I love it, but the community is not the community. Actually, the problem is with me. The problem is with me because like Counter-Strike, I just don't have a knack of playing that game good. You know, like you're supposed to have, you have three powers that you can save, and you know, like. If you, depending on your position, you either save them or keep on deploying them to, you know, get in the upper hand. You save them to, you know, protect yourselves from attacks from behind. I either never get the driving line right. I'm not talking about hitting the walls. I hardly ever hit all walls anymore unless, you know, I'm driving at 200
miles
an hour.
You're improving.
That's not the issue. The issue is that sometimes I just miss the power-up sometimes. Either the car is like, you know, going too wide, I'm not prepared for that turn, or, you know, it's too tight, and then, you know, I miss just the drift of the car. So I basically miss the points. That's probably like, you know, one third of my problem. The other third is, the two thirds is most of all, I just don't know which powers to keep and, you know, which ones to save for the worst or, you know, how. I'll give you, this is the basic example. I start off in, let's say, you know, the first position or second, whatever. During the first half of this track, I'm, you know, third or fourth. Suddenly there will be a time where I start getting hit like all over the place. There's like five or six fucking missile shunts.
But isn't that the point of Blur? I mean, that's Blur, right?
No, that's the point. No, see, that's the thing. That the when you have, you know, kart racers. Like, I wasn't this bad at CTR. Dude, I was so good at CTR. Okay, I wasn't that great, but you know, I was pretty damn decent.
I think you're putting yourself up too high right now.
Oh no, I was as good at CTR as I am at, let's say, Team Fortress, for instance.
Okay.
So, you know, like, I understood, you know, what power-ups to take, but the thing is that, you know, with holding three power-ups now, I don't know whether Mario Kart had this or not, but having the ability to hold power-ups, it's such a game-changer, because I am always thinking of, you know, I don't know, I just cannot play this game for shit. I'm usually... sometimes there's another mode actually, which is just without power-ups. It's just called hardcore racing, but then that sort of defeats the purpose of this game, because otherwise I might as well just play Forza 3.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, I love this game so much, but man, people are so better than me. It's like Counter-Strike, right? Because I love that game, but there's so many people who are so good at this game than me that it just ruins the fun. Completely just destroys the experience.
But isn't like that in every game right now? Every game that comes out, you have such elite players, except for Battlefield, which is, that's why we love that game so much, you know?
No, see, this is the thing. Like, I'll give you another example. Modern Warfare 2.
Yeah, that game is just completely elitist.
Yeah, because you have these perk systems that you see. The thing is that there's additional layers of gameplay involved in this game that, you know, you have to account for those things as well within your strategy when you're playing the game. So I'm such a fucking simple-minded fuck that I'm just thinking that, you know, okay, I need to do this, I need to pick this power up, and then wham, getting slammed from behind 3-4 times, car is fucking wrecked in 2 turns, and then I'm tense.
I don't know, whenever I used to play that game on the demo, or the beta when we played it,
The beta was nice. I wasn't so bad in the beta because it was an even playing field. You did not have ridiculously overpowered cars, because here's the thing, you also have these mods. The mods are like, you know, let's say that sometimes when you cross once you start the start line again, you get a free NOS boost, let's say, for instance. Or, you know, you have the ability to dodge shunts, the incoming homing missiles at the right time if you have that specific mod installed. The mods add another layer of depth and complexity that just sort of, I just do not account for it. And these small things all add up to me completely screwing up the game and, you know, just coming in last almost every time. So I just cannot, you know... man, I don't know. Like, Modern Warfare 2, my whole issue was the fucking perk system. It just completely ruined the game for me. And, you know, this is why I prefer games like Halo so much, where, you know, it's not about, it's sort of about your loadout, like in Bad Company 2, but then there's a lot of strategy and on the field thinking involved itself. It's not part of, you know, there's not a huge amount of luck involved. Or, you know, thinking like 2 or 3 levels ahead. I don't know, man. I'm just not cut off with
I just remember you playing, I think it was a couple of days back, and I was playing online on Red Dead, and then you and Arafat were playing, and I suddenly see you getting pissed off and just leaving the party.
I have
going
done
offline.
This, like, without fail in the last 4 or 5 days.
Which is quite hilarious, because I was like, I thought you guys loved this game. Why are you guys not playing it anymore?
I love it. Everybody, that's the thing. You love a game so much, but then if you can't get good, if you keep on failing always, then, you know, it sort of takes its toll. Which is why I have been playing shitloads of Team Fortress 2, especially now, because these guys, Valve announced that, or they released Team Fortress 2 for Mac on Thursday evening. So if you have a Mac now, you can play Team Fortress 2. Anybody who logs in using a Mac until the 14th.
Wasn't it like a free weekend this weekend?
Yeah, this weekend. It still is free right now. So you can actually download the whole of Team Fortress 2 and play it for free until the end of Sunday night.
Oh, nice.
Or no, I think it'll be early Monday morning for us, because it's Sunday night in US. Anywho, I mean, you can play the game, you know, test it out for yourself and see how huge the game is on the PC compared to, you know, the 360 version. And, of course, anybody who logs in with the Macs, they get the new earbuds, which is a very, you know, huge nod to Mac players, also, you know, a huge target as well. You can hardly see the earbuds unless, you know, up close and personal. Or, you know, when you get
the characters have earbuds on themselves. Like
the characters have earbuds. Like, you know, you wear
that's
a hat.
That's how you differentiate between the Mac players. Like, that's what
Mac
they've done.
Mac player and the PC player.
Ah, okay.
So they get this, and what's it called? I think though, if you have a Mac and then you go back to playing from your PC again, then you have the earbuds as well. I think that's possible. But anyways, forgetting that, the new interface is I'm not a fan of it. I mean, it's not as simplistic. It's very, you know, like in your face, big ass buttons and shit. Like there's a new tutorial in probably for the new players, for the new Mac players, you know. Also, the game is now $9.99. Come on, man. Pick it up, guys. Like this is one of the best, if not the best, multiplayer.
I think it is the best multiplayer experience, at least we've ever experienced. In our group circle.
Every game, every different map, every, like, you know, server you join, like, you pick up one or two good servers that you just stick to, and then, you know, it is just awesome. Like, I'm exclusively playing on UK servers now. Ping I'm getting is somewhere between mid-150s, which is fine. If you're above, you know, like, let's say 180 or something, then, you know, you'll struggle a bit with sniping or, you know, some precision shooting. But if you're playing a heavy and you're just spraying bullets, then, you know, it's not that big a deal. I'm not saying that heavy isn't something that doesn't require skill. I'm just saying. TF2, a lot of that, guys, just buy that game. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, we've spread a lot of love for that game on this podcast.
Yeah, but still not enough. Never enough love for TF2. Apart from that, I have been playing nothing else. I'm just getting a sort of an itch nowadays that, you know, apart from now that Blur's done and, you know, I can see the bleak season ahead of me. I'm sort of getting the itch to buy Mass Effect on the PC, playing it over there on Steam. I don't know why. That game was so damn good. But anyway, I haven't given it to the temptations yet.
You know what would be a good game? I don't know. Red Dead Redemption, maybe? Ever thought of that?
Open world games are not my thing.
You would rather play a game which you've already played rather than play a new game which you know is good, or at least 95% of the world population is saying it's good.
I won't like playing it. That's the whole point, right?
At least give it a chance.
Don't buy games that you know that you won't like playing.
So at least
I should finish Uncharted 2.
Or that, yeah. You could do that. Wait.
Yeah. I probably should. But apart from that, I mean, honestly, I'm just thinking I'll probably go back to Halo 3 a little bit now. Because Bad Company 2, I love that game. But some of the patterns, I think I'll need another month's break from Bad Company 2 to come back to it. It's too soon. I mean, that game sure takes your toll on it. Some matches drag on for way too long. So, I haven't been playing much. I'm just thinking about what to play more. And that's it. So that's what we have been playing. Nothing, no new games for me now.
It's the summer. It's quite sad,
yeah,
actually.
That's how it's going to be, which is why, you know, our new section will help us out a lot.
That's true.
So, yeah. Let's jump on to what we've been watching.
Okay. So this week I watched two movies in the cinema. So the first movie I watched was The A-Team. I went on Friday with like a group of friends, and The A-Team is basically reimagining of the old TV show called The A-Team, and it's known for its like balls out, batshit insane violence, and
it's fun violence.
It's incredibly stupid. I'll just say the movie is incredibly stupid, but it's a lot of fun. It's a great like group movie if you want to go and watch it, because it's a lot of fun,
a good
summer blockbuster is basically one which basically does not bore you, and like for the first Transformers, even though that was not, you know, like it wasn't like intellectually smart or like it wasn't like that, like if you like looked into the plot, you could find plot holes like you were eating peanuts, but you go to see these movies to have fun, right? They have to be entertaining at the surface level, at least. The A-Team balls
like eating peanuts. Sorry, I just gotta say that again. Plot hole like eating peanuts. That's quite a saying. Okay, you created it, right?
Yep, on the spot.
You just okay, sweet.
Yeah. Anyway, The A-Team is incredibly stupid, yes, but it's still fun, and I enjoy the hell out of it. It's basically following these four guys. Liam Neeson, who basically...
What?
Yeah, Liam Neeson's the...
Neeson's in it?
Yeah, Liam Neeson's basically continuing his action, like, persona as being a badass, and he is pulling it off excellently. He is pulling it off really well. We saw that in Taken, he could do it. He himself could hold up an action film, and he's continuing that over here. He plays Colonel Smith in this movie. For the A-Team fans. There's Bradley Cooper in this movie who plays, I can't remember his name. He basically plays the playboy kind of ranger. All these four people are rangers.
From the, what's it called?
He's the guy from The Hangover.
Yeah.
And he's basically being the playboy over here. He gets all the girls, etc. He's still like a pretty good soldier. The third person is Charlton Copley, who basically plays the pilot of the team. He's, if you remember District 9, he is Wickes van der Merwe. And, he is basically the comedic relief in this film, and he pulls it off so well. He's got such charisma in this film, and such like, such amazing dialogue, like comedic timing. It's quite amazing, how he pulled it off in this film. And, definitely check him out when you go. He was my favorite character in the film. And then there's Quentin, Rampage Jackson, who plays Mr. T. He's like the brawler in the film. So there's this team of four, and basically they keep doing missions. The first scene basically shows you how they're formed, and then it just jumps 8 years later, and 80 missions successful later. So these guys are good at their work. They are the best squad, but they are very reckless, and they are known for their recklessness. And so the story is basically these guys are like thrown into a mission and to retrieve like these money plates which are in Afghanistan or Iraq. I'm not sure they basically are framed, and now they're like fugitives. They're fugitives in war, for war crimes, and that's where the film starts. So I won't say more than that. All I'll say is that if you are going for this movie, just go to enjoy it. Take a large group with you, and I'm pretty sure they'll enjoy it. What was quite interesting was that when I went, a lot of girls came, and they also enjoyed it, which was quite interesting because I didn't expect the females to enjoy this movie because, you know, it's more of a male fantasy. But they enjoyed it too, so that was good, which was quite interesting. So A-Team, definitely check it out. It won't get like the best of reviews, but it's all fun. So
stupid fun.
Yeah, it's stupid fun, and the action set pieces are a lot of fun. Yeah, the stories were a bit predictable, but you know what? It's all camp and very, you know, tongue in cheek. So that's
like eating penis, baby. That's what it's all about.
So the other film, so A-Team is like I recommend it. Check it out in the cinema. The other movie I watched is Roman Polanski's The Ghostwriter. Now this movie came out in the Ghostwriter.
Not writer.
The writer. No, that film sucked. That was a deplorable film.
Okay.
Yeah. The Ghostwriter is Roman Polanski's. I'm guessing his last film because he's in jail right now, because he was. I think 35 years back he was accused of
child molestation or something like that.
And they we shouldn't laugh because that's kind of sick.
Dude, that was 35 years ago, man. Yeah, and he's in jail right now, so what's there not to laugh about?
Anyway, he's a masterful director. He's basically like his past works have basically shown he's basically one of the legendary filmmakers living right now. Well, and now he's in jail right now, so I'm guessing this will be his last film.
So he's even more legendary now.
Indeed. Anyway, this movie stars Ewan McGregor and Pierce Brosnan, and it's basically about this prime minister, ex-prime minister Adam Lang, played by Pierce Brosnan, and he basically has to write his memoirs, and he calls in on a ghost to help him write his memoir, and. A ghost writer, a person who doesn't like disclose any of his information, because he's in direct contact with the ex prime minister himself, and he's called Ewan McGregor's the new ghost because the old ghost died, and that's where the film starts with the old ghost dying and basically his body being found on the shores of the island where Adam Lang's beach house is located. So Ewan McGregor gets
like
the job.
A conspiracy thriller then.
It's more of a mystery suspense movie. And it's like I'll just say this: they don't make movies like these anymore. because like the new
Polanski is in jail.
The new directors basically they rely on shortcutting, you know, fast cutting of movies like heavily these days. But in this movie, there's like
what do you mean by fast cutting? You mean fast editing or, you know,
shots? Like quick shots, like, you know, Bond style. But they rely on that for like every movie nowadays. And I wouldn't say I'm a fan of that. I like the movie.
There are a lot of long shots in this movie.
There are a lot of long shots. Polanski has such confidence in his direction. It's quite amazing. It takes time to get into the story. It lays down its characters slowly. It gets into the story. It gets into the meat of the story. It's like a procedural, this film. Yeah, but it is a great film. This movie came out in the same week as Shutter Island this year, and Shutter Island was also directed by Martin Scorsese, who was another legendary filmmaker, who's not in jail. But these guys are two, basically in one week you had two like legendary filmmakers just proving to the people that yes, even these guys still have it. You know, these guys still have, they've still got it in themselves to come out with great movies. Yes, these are not their best movies, but they're still extremely, extremely strong films. And it shows that like they have such confidence in their direction. It's amazing just to see classic Polanski on screen. Like when there are so many like signature shots of his in this movie, and just like these like simple stories can become like make you feel so tense, and like so like, you know, it gives you such a disquieting feeling while watching this movie. It's quite amazing. So I this movie is highly recommended. It's probably one of my favorite movies of this year.
Not in the cinemas.
I went to the cinema. I like to pay for my movies, so I would say go and watch it in the cinema. But if you're in US,
what
it would be hard.
What you think people who watch at home, they don't pay for the movies?
Well, I know some people don't.
Anywho, I'm just saying that the experience would be much better appreciated at home rather than a cinema.
No, I would say cinema, because the cinema is like your complete concentration is on the screen. You don't get up and go to the toilet. You don't get up and go to take a phone call. It's just you are there at that moment and you can experience it as it was meant to be experienced. And that's why like I like watching cinema, like movies in the cinema. And that first experience can never be like, you know, recreated or as like as satisfying as it was in the cinema. So I would say if you can go check it out in the cinema, it's a great movie. It came out in Feb in the US, so I'm guessing the Blu-ray is going to be coming out soon. In August. I think August 3rd is the Blu-ray release date.
Excuse me, Shutter Island Blu-ray is out.
Yeah, that's out.
So
check out, I guess, Shutter Island and Ghost Rider. These two movies are probably one of my like they both will, I guess, pop up on the top 10 list of. I don't know if yours, but yeah, easily I guess mine, because the summer season seems weak this year, except for like Toy Story 3, Inception, and Scott Pilgrim. That's it. There's nothing more. There's those three movies we have that are like we can look forward to, and rest of all just seems kind of like stale this year. So yeah, A-Team and Ghost Rider, check them out. Pretty cool films, and yeah, that's all I've been watching this week.
Okay, before we get into the the topic of the week, I just want to make a quick note of two movies that I watched today. Actually, no, I watched another movie. Just let me go to my library again. Where did it go? Yes, so the films that I watched today, there was a shitty film that I watched yesterday. Ah, forgot about it. Yeah, I watched the Super Street Fighter 4 anime. I've already written about it on the Culture, and you can read it over there, but short answer is do not watch that piece of shit.
Why was it so bad?
Dude, it is just bad. It is the culmination of all pathetic things of how Americans or, you know, the Western audience perceives anime in general. And, you know, typically, like, every aspect of that anime is bad. I'm talking from character design to... Okay, not character design, character animation to, you know, the overall presentation of the anime. It looks so budget title. I mean, you can't see anything. Production values are like rock bottom over this. Secondly, the voice acting was bad because unfortunately this is out on the... it came out with the collector's edition for the Super Street Fighter 4 on the PS3 and 360. So obviously over here it came out with dubs. Oh man, the dubs are bad. And secondly, the story is fuck all. I don't even want to get into it.
It is a brief like synopsis, maybe.
No. Seth, the villain from Street Fighter 4, he is kidnapping famous martial artists from all over the world, experimenting on them for some new way to enhance
like a Watchmen spin-off.
Inside every human being and bring it out, or you know, create a cataclysm that brings out this energy to, you know, for you know, huge destructive capabilities. Ryu, of course, is the guy who has this destructive capability that's over 9,000. So he wants to capture Ryu. Ryu is in a world of his own because he doesn't want to be like Akuma, who, you know, gave into his power. So he's trying to control his power. Dude, this, you know where this shit is heading. So I'm not going to even bother continuing with this. Suffice to say that, you know, just don't even bother, man. Come on. Just seriously don't bother with this shit. The 1994 film was so awesome. It didn't get that good a rating, but I'm just saying compared to this, that was...
Okay, that's... It's like okay.
Transformers was much better than Transformers 3. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So that's that. Apart from that, today afternoon, for the life of me, I can't remember what I watched yesterday. It was
forgettable. I'm guessing.
Forget it. Anyways, today afternoon I watched Kill Bill 1 and 2.
Nice. Did you watch it in succession, or did you watch it in?
You know, honestly, I didn't realize this at the time, but this was the first Kill Bill was the first Tarantino movie I watched. I never watched any of his other films prior to that movie.
Oh, really? Okay.
So for me, Kill Bill holds like a special place, you know, in my movie collection. I saw Pulp Fiction like probably a couple of months after I saw Kill Bill, because I was like, man, this guy's like, fuck, this movie's amazing. I was like, what other movies has he done? And I'm like, oh, Pulp Fiction. Heard about?
Yeah, that. I watched Pulp Fiction when I was 12, and look how I turned out.
Yeah. Okay. So I was a healthy 18-year-old at that time when I watched Kill Bill for the first time. So, anyways, I mean, I watched both the movies back to back. Sadly, the version that I had was the edited version. You know, where there's a lot of black and white scene during the with
the House of the Blue the cafe scene, and, yeah,
and then also in the second movie where Uma Thurman gets like she's you know buried alive, and then as soon as she turns on the torchlight and you know she's hearing all the sounds coming, that was also black and white. Apart from that, I mean, it was all color.
I mean, I didn't feel the movie like it took away from the experience, the black and white scenes, to be honest.
No, not now. But see, the thing is that I have seen an unedited version of the first movie with all the color, and really you sort of miss something out. I can see it, like, you know, if I showed that movie to someone like my mom, who's not so much, who actually detests gore, there wasn't much gore in the movie. I mean, it was just blood splattering, but you know, for someone like her, then you know, it sort of toned it down a bit, which would sadly be pretty much the entire
fight sequence,
because that's what Quentin Tarantino was afraid of. So, anyways, I'm just saying that, you know, man, just wow. I mean, the whole feel of both the movies is so different. The first movie was so, I mean, it was such a callback to the old Japanese movies, and well, I don't know,
like kung fu martial art movies.
Not just kung fu martial art. I'm talking about, you know, like old exploitation films and shit. You know how they, especially the advertisement and how about it went on for the movie.
Yeah, I think the more like slasher exploitation films. Homage was more in Death Proof and Grindhouse, you know?
You know, yeah, of course.
I mean, there were elements in it in Kill Bill. I'm saying there were elements in Kill Bill, but...
Keep in mind, Death Proof was almost entirely in Rodriguez's hands.
No, Death Proof was completely Tarantino. The other one. Planet Terror was completely Rodriguez.
Anyways, Rodriguez was in this as well. I don't know in what capacity. I think it was producer, maybe. Man, like, they completely captured the whole Japanese feel of you know, how awestruck it was, Uma Thurman was when she... Dude, whatever, I have not seen a single female lead in any movie apart from Aliens, where, you know, the woman is so not only empowered, but, you know, she can prove that she can kick ass.
Oh, hit girl.
It's not like, you know, some stupid situation was devised for her to, you know, overcome, like, you know, astronomical odds. I mean, she, oh, man, that was good. But anyways, apart from that, yeah, I watched the first movie like 3 times before this, and the second movie I only watched it once in the cinema. Because, you know, it was, at that time I thought it was a bore fest. Now I know better.
I love that movie, actually.
My taste in movies has matured quite a bit after all these years of watching odd cult stuff. Brilliant movies, both of them. And, you know, it completely, like, how the pacing changes in both these movies and how, especially towards the end of the second movie, I mean, it was literally just dialogue and exposition, and but you were so involved in that scene, like, you know, how Inglourious Basterds was, that first part where they were showing the Nazi general.
Every like dialogue heavy scene in every Tarantino movie, if you're going for an action movie, do not go for a Tarantino movie, because that's like saying, why am I going for?
Here's the best part, because Tarantino understands that, you know, he understands how to feed his audience. He'll give them nice exposition. He'll, like, you know, slowly build it up, and then when it happens, it's quick sometimes, but it is so gratifying.
Yeah, it's gratifying, and so, like, you know, you're just like struck in awe at that point, because you're just like, because stuff has just been escalating, and then suddenly, boom! In a matter of a few seconds, everything just goes down. It's quite.
This is something that, you know,
tense.
Tarantino is a master of course, non-linear storytelling. Yes, non-linear storytelling. That reminds. Oh yeah, that's the topic of the week. Sorry. Yeah, that was the other movie I watched this week, which I was thinking about.
Which one?
Anywho, so yeah, Kill Bill. Watch these movies if you haven't. God damn, these movies are good. Okay, so let's move on to the topic of the week quickly.
Okay.
Topic of the week this week was suggested by Arafat, who is ironically
failed to join us today.
Boondock Saints is what we watch now. Both of these guys.
We have a trailer for that, so I guess we'll do that first and then continue on.
Whoops! Did I spoil? No, I mean, yeah, you can continue with the trailer.
All right.
Go ahead.
So the people in the house basically won't be able to see the trailer because they'll be listening to it. Anyway, here goes.
I hope this is short.
It's about a minute, yeah. Anyway, I'm playing it.
Start.
It's decent men, loving families. They go home every day after work. They turn on the news, you know what they see? They see rapists and murderers and child molesters. They don't get out of prison. Everywhere, everyone thinks the same thing.
Kill them all. Admit it? Even you've thought about it?
You guys should be in every major city.
These two are not heroes. They're just two ordinary men who were put in an extraordinary situation, and they just happened to come out on the top.
Oh, good.
Yes, we are.
For thee, my lord, for thee, power hath descended forth from thy hand. Our feet may swiftly carry out thy command. So we shall flow a river forth to thee, in teeming a soul shall it ever be. And when your patriot feeling, spirit is silent.
So that was from the trailer of Troy Duffy's 1999 film, The Boondock Saints. Time will go ahead.
I'm just going to give a short synopsis. You might have guessed from the trailer that, you know, it's about two brothers. Well, you might not have guessed that part. Anyway, it's about two brothers who basically got caught up in a small, not a gang war, but, you know, they got mixed up in a Russian, between two, like, you know, the
conflict between a Russian mob, I guess you can say that.
Yeah, and then anyways, shit happened. They killed the Russian mobsters and in self-defense. And, you know, the local newspaper said that, you know, oh, you know, this is so awesome that, you know, they killed mobsters. Okay, fine, done. So what happens is that the people they kill, the mobsters, they got a hint from them that, you know, there's a bunch of Russian bosses were, you know, mob bosses were meeting up. So they go and, you know, in order to kill them, they basically kill them out of sheer dumb luck. And so from there on, they actually continue their whole stream of, you know, killing mobsters, gang members, higher men, like, you know, not just, you know, people on the streets or something. These are top dogs. So they go ahead killing these guys. And then on the other hand, you have a detective who is, of course, on this case, he always... Well, you know, he's a detective, so the police always
reach
after the... No, I'm saying that he, the police always reaches the crime scene after, you know, shit has gone down. Anywho, the detective later realizes that, you know, who these people are, because he is the one who actually interviewed these guys, these brothers, when they killed the original Russian mobsters. And then, you know, he found out that, you know, it was just a self-defense case. Later on, towards the end of the movie, he realizes...
Whoa. Spoilers,
Dude, whatever, man. Okay, guys, listen up. This is a 1999 movie.
But we decided on the fact that we'll give like a spoiler warning in between, like.
Spoiler warning now.
This so is I guess.
You know, just for the record, all of these sections, you know, all of our topic of the weeks, whether they're games or, you know, anime series, whatever, it's gonna be full of spoilers.
Yeah, so but then I thought
we're gonna. Yeah, this is the thing. This is why we're gonna tell you guys what we're gonna watch next week, so you know you're prepared that, you know, this is the topic of the week. If you do not want to, you know, spoil the story for yourselves, then skip the section completely, I guess, which is why we also keep it in the end.
I was wondering if you could do a section where we just say, like, without spoilers, a general, and then we give, like, a spoiler warning, and then we continue into the in-depth, I guess, review.
Okay, so I'm going to give my spoiler-free impressions. Decent cult movie. I like certain aspects of it, certain things I didn't like. Pacing overall was pretty nice. It started off non-linear, like sort of like Tarantino-ish, you know, skipping from scene to scene, going back and forth between the timeline. And then I think halfway through the movie, it just continued on from that point onwards till the end. What else? Yes. William Dafoe, who plays the what's it called?
It's Willem, it's not William.
Okay, yeah, sorry, my bad. Who plays the detective? He is he's gay, but this is probably the best gay character I have seen ever in any movie. Played to, you know, perfection, which is sort of scary. But that's how that guy plays all of his roles. He's scary, and both the brothers. I mean, the Boondock Saints, if you will.
The McFarlane brothers, right? That's what they're called, right? That's the name.
They were just, you know, I mean, whatever. I'm not a particular fan of Irish actors. I love Ireland, but not Irish actors. And, you know, it's, whatever. Nothing that great about them.
Okay.
So it was a good, fun movie, fun laugh, but, you know, it's not something that you will remember years later on, like, you know, any other classic pulp films, I would say.
Okay, so I watched this film, I think, 3-4 years back, and I remember enjoying it then. But so I watched it again this weekend for the podcast, and yeah, it doesn't hold up as well as I thought it would, because I mean, Arfi is a very big fan of this film, and he's not here.
Yeah,
listen.
For the record, he was the one who suggested us the. Well, yeah, I already said that he suggested it, and he loves that movie,
and he's watched it numerous times, which I don't know understand. How anybody could enjoy it like a second time on. Anyway, so it's a cult movie. It was Troy Duffy's first movie, and he had a pretty insane experience in this film while making it. I mean, shit was just going down for him. He was not an easy person to work with, as people have said in interviews, and the studio was pressurizing him. He was not reacting well to it, and it opened pretty abysmally to the... It opened basically only to 5 theaters. 5.
What?
not even 500, 5 theaters. Because the studios were like on such a... like a. There was basically bad conflict going between these two. Anyway, the film is... It, as I said, it like gained a cult following on DVD. Mostly in colleges in 2000 and 2001. and went on to make $50 million. And the budget of this movie was pretty low. I think it was barely $10 million. I'm not sure though. Anyway, you see, it's his first movie, so you see like some of the scenes are directed very amateurishly, but there are some great scenes as well as scenes which are just like, yeah, he could have improved on those. The dialogue is kind of meh at some points, and some points are like there are lines which are like very memorable, but there are some lines which are just like, you know, kind of cheesy. Yeah, they're very cheesy and very corny, and you're just like you just cringe at that moment.
Really? So, I was just rolling my eyes, man.
Okay.
So I'm not cringe anymore. I've seen horrible shit.
Yeah, we've seen horrible shit, but like we expected this movie to hold up. At least I did, and it didn't. And like there were some characters just in the movie just to be, you know, like over the top. Like for example, the guy who was the bartender, the father, or the person who was the bartender, who like stuttered while he talked. That character was kind of unnecessary.
Who are you talking about?
The old guy who I'm not sure if he was their father. I'm pretty sure he wasn't their father.
Okay. The bartender whose
bar was like under pressure of closing down.
Yeah.
And that guy was just there. Was just like whacked out for being whacked out.
But his part in the whole scene was like, or in the whole movie, in fact, wasn't even like, not even a minute, maybe.
Yeah, and he, whenever he was on screen, I was just like, God, please make this guy go away. I despise that guy's performance in the film.
I don't know. I really hated their mutual friend who wanted revenge and who
the funny man,
the whole thing.
That's what they call him, the funny man.
Oh God. Yeah, he deserved that. Okay, can we go into spoilers now?
I'll just finish. I'm saying the film has these like really over the top characters.
And okay, here's another thing. The word fuck is used way too many times to the effect of, you know, just me being like, why
are you even doing this anymore?
just why?
And the movie is like non-linear in the sense like it follows a non-linear pattern in a very linear way. In the sense that like...
It reminded me, initially it reminded me of the Hangover. In the sense that, you know, okay, the Hangover wasn't shown as a completely non-linear movie. But, you know, you had like these glimpses of what happened the night before and, you know, how these guys are sort of piecing together these pieces. Sort of the same experience initially, but then, like I said, later on, like halfway through the movie, it just continued on whatever. They just completely, like, you know, the screen went blank as soon as the director didn't want to
show
anything. That's
true. But like in The Hangover, it didn't feel like, you know, ham-fisted and like in your face.
No, not at all.
Yeah, it felt like it was just like it. That was the style of the movie, and you accepted it.
It felt like a logical way of, you know, proceeding.
But in this, the way they are basically like portraying the film is like they have these guys going to an action scene, and it shows like the aftermath, and then after it shows the aftermath while the police officers are like in the scene, or while they're just like, you know, investigating the scene, they replay the action scene. Now it works the first couple of times, but then it just gets like so very like, you know, you're just like, you know, you're just completely, it becomes predictable in that sense. And this movie is basically like, I would say the movie is like the plot is kind of, I'll say the plot is not the screenplay and the plot is not the strongest one. Just a second, dude, chill.
Oh, God.
the plot is kind of meh, and the screenplay is also kind of just like it's crap basically. Don't watch it for those types. And the action scene, like the movie is basically just a string of action scenes, like 8 to 9 action set pieces, which works sometimes, which don't work sometimes. So it's I actually would not recommend this movie to anybody or to watch it, because when I watched it first, I was recommending it to people, but now when I think about it, it does not hold up. So I guess.
But you don't think it's good enough even for like a one-time view?
Maybe one time view, but then I was just like so bored in the movie at so many points. I guess we can go into spoilers now. Let's just go into spoilers.
Oh, by the way, I'll just say this. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page. The budget of the movie was $6 million. Right. The U.S. theater gross revenue was $30,000.
Yeah, because it played in like 5 seconds.
The national theater revenue was $219,000. On the home video, though, it made $50 million.
Yeah, so it like gained a cult following mostly in in between college students, and DVD sales were just like insane for this film, and like I was watching a couple of videos of Comic Con, the Boondock Saints 2 All Saints Day came out last year, and it came out in 2009, and they had like a special panel for it in Comic Con, and let me say this, the Boondock Saints are like the male equivalents of the female fans for Twilight. They do not want to hear any they do not want to hear any bad talk against the Boondock Saints. They consider it like a very personal attack towards them. But I just feel sad for them because this movie ain't that great. even as a cult movie, I wouldn't say there are many other better movies in the market to watch than this. So, I really wanted Arfi to be on the podcast because I really wanted Arfi to be on the podcast because he would like I guess defend the movies, but
to death.
But it's not that great a film. You want to go into spoilers now?
Well, there's not much left to say about the film. Let's go into spoilers anyways.
Alright, from here on out, spoilers. So if anybody hasn't seen this movie, tune out, I guess.
If you care. The detective at the end of the day realized that, you know, this is something that he wanted to do, that, you know, he wants to bring justice to the people and, you know, bring these bad guys to, you know, to their rightful end, except he can't do that because there's so much red tape going on in the whole department. So he actually then starts helping, well, they destroy it in the last scene, that he actually helps these guys out by allowing them to kill one of the big ringleaders during his during his hearing. Yes, so all three of these guys, okay. Oh, fuck it, man. The ringleader, he says that, you know, okay, I'll bring out an old ass assassin that these guys used to use way back in the day, who's been sentenced to life since the past 25 years. It's 25 to life, basically. So they bring him out to kill these two guys who were wreaking havoc because they were killing everybody linked to the Italian and the Russian mafia. So it turns out that the guy who they send to kill these two is also wasn't their father?
Yeah, he was their father.
The fuck? No way, dude.
Don't you remember the line where they said that?
Okay, hold up a second. I'll just read Wikipedia. Why don't you just go ahead with the...
Okay, so basically in the movie they say that there's a prayer that these two brothers recite before killing anybody or quote-unquote executing anybody, and the Duke, El Duce, or whatever his name is, he also recites it. So basically, that's our key to know that he is a blood related person to this family, to the
father of Connor and Murphy, who was released from prison by.
Yes, so he is their father because he recites the prayer which they say before executing somebody. So that's our key that he is their father. Weren't you listening?
Fuck.
So yeah, this movie is really forgettable. It's I don't know why Arfi suggested this movie to us.
Anyways, I mean, I'm just saying that, you know, it's nice that I sort of enjoyed it in the sense that, you know, I kept in mind that this is a cult movie. I went to it with that. It broke apart near the end. I'm going to say that. And the whole, you know, vigilante thing, it sort of reminded me of Death Note as well. But, you know, unlike Death Note, this was carried out with little to no intellect whatsoever.
Another thing I want to talk about, like, this movie tried to it tried to give a message of some kind so very ham-fistedly and so very like in your face that it just like fell apart. And
because you were like, man, this is such a naive view of you know delivering.
It's such a very like you know
message you're trying to deliver.
It's a very juvenile view, I would say, juvenile. And at the end of this of the movie, while the credits are rolling, they have this montage of interviews of saying how do you feel the Saints' actions are, because the Saints are basically going on a killing spree, killing every crime syndicate boss underground, and they are basically, and the, like that's the whole movie. these two people trying to take down every mob boss in Boston.
Like, you know, the justice system doesn't work. Give it to a bunch of vigilantes who will, you know, take care of shit. People may not agree with it. Some people will, but
yeah, it's not very affecting
Yeah, and because this more than anything reminded me of Death Note, because you know over there you had somewhat of a scene going as well, but of course Death Note evolved into something much higher than that. So I don't know. I mean, it's an old movie. It's not something that's recent that you know you may want to watch to, you know, catch up. But if you like cult movies, definitely give it one shot.
There are a couple of action scenes which are pretty cool actually. They like the scene where when they fall out of the vent,
ceiling, and yeah, and
yeah. They, so that was pretty, like, that was something we had never seen.
It was good
before.
Stuff. I mean, it was good stuff. Even when you know the replaying of their crime scenes, and you know, like how he relives the scenes as to, you know, how the crimes were carried out. I mean, it was a nice way of telling the story.
But so, it got old way too quickly. Like,
yeah, because he just kept on repeating it. I mean, the way the scenes are carried out. Again, if you like cult movies, or you know, like B's type movies, then
the action movies, definitely check it. But the message they're trying to do is very ham-fisted. And it should not have been in this movie, in my opinion,
don't
because it's
take
a cult
much
movie.
Away from the movie, I mean, you know, especially in today's world, there's nothing much to take away from a 10-year-old movie. Well, a 10-year-old sort of cult movie. If you watch Fight Club, even now, that movie holds up so brilliantly. I think we should probably watch Fight Club again as another talk.
We should have watched Fight Club instead of this movie.
yes, because Fight Club was ironically the. It started off as the same thing. I mean, it didn't have a conflict between movie studios and the director, but the movie wasn't taken up so good in the cinemas because the advertisements for the movie didn't show much that was going on. Of course, they couldn't because, you know, they'd spoil the story. And the movie just exploded on the DVD scene once it got released.
Yeah, that's true. And that movie was insanely well directed.
Oh, and hell yes.
Yeah, like if you go to see the
let's not get it. Whoa, let's not get into that movie. Because, you know, that's like comparing
Fight Club.
I can't even think of proper comparison.
Like, look, okay, I'll just say that movie on repeat viewings.
That's like comparing The Dark Knight to Transformers 2. Okay, Transformers 2.
Okay,
let's leave it at that.
I'm just saying that movie, like, it rewards you on multiple viewings, right? It rewards you. This movie does not. There's nothing in this movie's a hole. It's a black hole. We're coming off so negative in this
holes
movie.
With peanuts. No, sorry, I forgot. Plot holes like eating peanuts. Plot holes like eating peanuts.
Like it has so many like such amateurish like views on everything. It's really.
I think now. Listen. I realize why Arfi is such a fan of this movie. He probably watched this movie at the time of his life when the message that the director was trying to portray, that it was something that affected Arfi.
I guess,
something that affected Arfi at that time, and then, you know, that's a message that he then took with the rest of his you know, since then. So in his mind, the movie will always be like, you know, something amazing. Like, let me give you an example of people who watched the original Neon Genesis Evangelion, the original TV series at that time. Even, you know, a couple of years later down the line, these are teens for whom when watching that TV series, it made sense, you know, because, you know, it realized what was going on in their lives, you know, emo, whatever. So it's like that, you know, these people have fond memories because they watched the movie at the right time in their life when they would have been influenced by something like this. Or, you know, they thought that, you know, whatever they, some subconscious level, the movie portrays their feelings. So they like it.
I guess, but it's basically...
Which I think is why Arfi and, you know, the Boondock Saints fans are, you know, so much in love. I guess, you know, you could say that for any other entertainment medium, which doesn't hold up anymore. But they're still fans for those things. So, yeah, Boondock Saints, if you like regular movies or you're not that much of a fan of, you know, cult movies, then don't even bother.
Yeah, I would not recommend this movie.
Okay.
There are so many other better movies on the market you could have just... Like,
oh, hell yes. Hell yes.
So, don't waste your time on this film. We're coming up so negative on this film.
Whatever. Our few missed it. Let's end it this week then. But for next week, I am gonna, it's my turn for next week. Next week is actually, the podcast is gonna be on a Monday night instead of Saturday or Sunday, because I'll be out of country for my sister's wedding and I'm getting back on Monday. I hope that's okay with all of y'all.
You haven't said...
I'm telling you this, but I'm asking you here.
I'm fine.
You have holidays, man. You're not doing anything.
what we've decided that every week we'll choose one thing to review, as we said before, but what we decide in between ourselves, in between Arfi, me, and Taimur, is that the first week we gave it to Arfi, who chose the Boondock Saints. The second week is Taimur's choice, and he chose...
It's my choice, actually, because I'll be out of country. So these two will get enough time to watch whatever I'm suggesting. What I'm suggesting is, in fact, the Neon Genesis Evangelion movies, the rebuild of Evangelion movies.
The one new ones. Two. Yeah, the one and two, correct. And the next week, I'll be choosing a movie and basically...
It could be a game.
Or a chunk of anime episodes. But we've decided that whatever, one of the co-hosts says they want to review, we review that, even though it could be, a 1925 movie. It doesn't matter. It could, you have to watch it, at least in between us, we have to watch it, so
that
we review
it.
I hope
it doesn't come to that. There's a lot of stuff to cover between now and 1925, which is actually decent enough that I can watch. I don't like old stuff.
I'm just an example.
Okay.
But yeah.
So yeah, next week is going to be the rebuild of Evangelion. That's Evangelion 1.11. You cannot. Oh, it's yeah. The first movie was called Evangelion 1.11. You are not alone. And the second movie is called Evangelion 2.22. You cannot advance. Both of these movies are out on Blu-ray. They can be easily acquired. Should our viewers like that in any way, shape, or form. I mean, the movie's been out on DVD since forever now. So definitely check it out. I would suggest watching it in subtitles, of course. English dubs are okay. Some of them, for some characters this week, so that's why I'm suggesting just watch it in the Japanese, language with, English dubs, sorry, English subtitles. You'll be fine. So yeah, that's it for this week.
Let's
wrap it up. You can find me and Mihir on Twitter. That's twitter.com/MihirJ, MIHIRJ, and twitter.com/TaimurH. Also, twitter.com/dculture101. That's one word. You can email us on dculture101@gmail.com, or just leave your comments on any of our podcast posts. That's it for the week, I guess.
Yep, that's it.
Cool. Okay, guys. Thanks a lot for joining us this week, and we'll catch you next Monday
night. All right. All right. See you, guys.
Bye.